This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine you're rushing to the emergency room. You're in pain. You're panicked. You really need a doctor.
Right. The absolute worst case scenario.
Exactly. But the decision of whether you get a bed immediately or, you know, get sent to the waiting room for hours, it isn't made by a triage nurse looking at you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's made by a silent algorithm, just kind of processing your vitals in the background. And that isn't some pitch for a sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
That is the actual reality we are stepping into right now.
It really is. The algorithms are already here. I mean, they're acting as these invisible gatekeepers to our healthcare, our mortgages, our careers.
And today, for this deep dive, we are looking at how global regulators are basically scrambling to put a leash on them. Because the challenge those regulators are facing is just, well, it's unprecedented.
It completely is. We are moving from a world where bureaucracy was managed by people, you know, people you could talk to or even argue with. And we're moving to a system managed entirely by code. So the core tension here isn't about stopping the technology. It's about preserving human agency when an algorithm has the power to dictate the trajectory of your life.
Which is terrifying, honestly.
Yeah.
But we are working with a highly specific roadmap today to understand how this is actually going to play out for you, the listener.
Yes, we have some fantastic source material to go through.
We do. We are decoding the Annex 3 portion, which specifically covers use cases of the Draft Commission guidelines on high-risk AI classification. And this all falls under Article 6 of the EU AI Act.
It's a massive piece of legislation.
Huge. And a crucial detail for you listening. The comprehensive commentary and the translation of this material we're using today was provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker. He provided all these insights that we're about to dig into.
Yeah, but before we dive into the mechanics of this, we really need to establish a firm baseline.
Go for it.
The document we are analyzing from lawyer Kyungjin Kim is a non-binding draft. It is currently just intended for stakeholder consultation.
So it's not the final law yet.
Exactly. Think of this as a blueprint. It is not finalized law, but it provides a highly detailed window into the exact mechanisms regulators want to use to control the future of artificial intelligence.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the underlying philosophy here is what the EU calls a risk-based approach.
Yes, at the core of it.
And the term high risk sounds, I don't know, it sounds like they're trying to ban the technology outright. But reading through the framework, it operates more like a heavy filter.
That's a great way to put it. The label high risk does not mean prohibited. It just means the AI system is operating in a sensitive area of a human being's life.
Like the hospital example.
Right. And because of that, it must clear a series of very high hurdles. We are talking about strict transparency requirements, rigorous safety checks, and mandatory human oversight before that software is ever allowed onto the market.
If the regulations are that heavy, I mean, I imagine tech companies are just desperate to avoid that label.
Oh, absolutely. They want to stay far away from it if they can.
And reading through the rules, there actually is an escape hatch. The regulators built in something called the filter mechanism under Article 6.3. So how does an AI system actually avoid getting slapped with this massive regulatory burden?
Well, exactly how they define that escape hatch is fascinating. Regulators understand that an AI might be operating in a hospital or a bank, but it might just be doing basic administrative chores.
Right, like background stuff.
Exactly. So the provider of the AI can run a self-assessment. They can exempt their system from the high-risk category if they can prove it does not materially influence a human decision.
Materially influence. That implies there has to be a tangible shift in the final outcome caused directly by the software.
Spot on. And the draft provides four strictly defined exemptions to clarify what that means in practice.
Let's hear them.
So the first exemption applies if the AI performs a narrow procedural task. Think about a massive university admissions office, right? If an AI is simply sorting thousands of incoming applications into different digital folders based on, say, the applicant's state of residency, that is a procedural task.
Wait, what does procedural actually mean when we were talking about computers? I mean, almost everything software does is technically a procedure.
That's a fair point. But in this specific context, it means the AI is organizing data by fixed objective fields, not evaluating the quality of that data.
Ah, I see.
So the AI sorting applications by zip code isn't assessing whether the student is a good fit for the university. It's literally just routing the paperwork.
Okay, sorting the mail makes sense. But what if the AI is actively touching the content of the work?
What do you mean?
Say I'm a manager writing a performance review for an employee. and I run it through an AI that alters my phrasing to sound more professional. Does that suddenly trigger the high-risk label because it changed the text?
No, and that brings us to the second exemption, improving the result of a previously completed human activity.
Oh.
If you, the human manager, have already made the decision that the employee gets a 3 out of 5 rating, and the AI simply polishes your grammar or clarifies your syntax without altering your final rating, the AI is exempt.
Because the human made the substantive decision.
Exactly. The machine just formatted it.
The third exemption seems to focus on oversight. The guidelines talk about detecting decision-making patterns or deviations.
Right. This is essentially quality assurance. Imagine an AI that reviews a teacher's grading history across thousands of exams.
Okay, sounds intense.
It is, but it's looking for statistical anomalies, like maybe the teacher grades significantly harsher on Friday afternoons. The AI flags that anomaly.
But it doesn't fix it.
Crucially, no. The AI cannot automatically alter the student's grades. It only highlights the pattern so a human supervisor can step in and review it.
Got it. And the fourth exemption covers preparatory tasks. So if I apply for a job in Germany and an AI simply translates my English resume into German so the hiring manager can actually read it, the AI is just prepping the document.
Precisely. Or another example, summarizing a 50-page medical history into a 1-page brief for a busy doctor.
Because the human still has to read the brief and make the actual diagnosis.
Yes, exactly.
So looking at these four exemptions, there's a really clear dividing line. It's like the difference between hiring an AI as an intern who organizes the file cabinets, checks for typos, and translates documents.
Right.
Versus hiring an AI as an executive who actually gets to decide who gets fired. The intern gets a pass from the regulators. The executive gets audited.
That is a perfect analogy. And the moment the AI crosses the line from intern to executive is the moment profiling gets involved. The draft is very explicit about this.
A profiling deal breaker?
Yes. The filter mechanism, all those exemptions we just discussed, is completely invalidated if the AI performs profiling on a natural person.
Let's break down the mechanics of profiling because it sounds like the absolute deal breaker for tech companies.
It really is. Profiling, in this legal framework, means the automated processing of personal data to evaluate specific aspects of a person's life.
Like what kind of aspects?
We are talking about analyzing your work performance, your economic situation, your reliability, or your personal interest to predict your future behavior.
Wow.
Yeah. If the AI system does that, you cannot claim it is just doing a preparatory task. The system is instantly categorized as high risk.
If predicting behavior based on data strips away your exemption, the immediate next question is, what happens when the system profiles something you can't change, like your physical body?
Oh.
Because the guidelines place a massive emphasis on biometrics.
What's fascinating here is how the physical self is treated as the ultimate boundary of privacy.
I mean, it has to be, right?
Right. Biometric data isn't a password you can just reset if there's a data breach. It is the fundamental geometry of your existence. So the draft heavily targets remote biometric identification, or RBI.
Which is like facial recognition.
Yes, but it goes much further than just spotting a face in a crowd. It heavily regulates biometric categorization based on sensitive traits.
So using AI to scan a crowd and infer someone's race, their political opinions, their religious beliefs, or, you know, their sexual orientation.
Exactly. And doing that is largely prohibited outright by the broader AI Act anyway. However, in the extremely narrow, highly specific legal exceptions where it might be permitted, the draft automatically forces those systems into the high-risk category. There is absolutely no filter mechanism available for that.
The document also zeroes in on emotion recognition, which is a technology that feels particularly invasive to me.
Oh, it's incredibly invasive.
We've all seen those software startups claiming they can tell if an employee is paying attention on a Zoom call or if a customer is angry just based on micro expressions.
Yeah, and the mechanism behind that emotion recognition usually involves mapping minute changes in facial musculature, analyzing vocal intonation, or even tracking the speed and pressure of your keystrokes.
That is wild.
It is, and the draft classifies any AI attempting to infer your internal emotional state from these physical markers as high risk. In fact, deploying emotion recognition in a workplace or an educational setting is completely banned.
Wow, just banned outright.
Unless it serves a strict safety or medical purpose. So like an algorithm monitoring a commercial truck driver's eye movements to detect sleepiness and prevent a crash, that would be allowed, but still strictly regulated.
Let me push back on this a bit, just bringing it to a mundane, everyday scenario.
Sure.
Let's say I'm walking through a shopping mall, and a digital billboard has a little camera. It scans me, guesses I'm a male in my mid-30s, and shows me an ad for razor blades.
Okay.
It's not identifying me specifically, just my demographics. Is that billboard suddenly a high-risk AI system?
Context and intent dictate the classification here. Under European privacy laws, standard demographic data like age and gender operate under different rules than immutable, highly sensitive traits like race or sexual orientation.
So they aren't treated the same.
Right. A system merely guessing your age or gender to serve a targeted ad isn't automatically high risk just for performing that specific function.
But the context changes if that same age guessing software is used by border control, right?
Exactly. If that age and gender inference is fed into a broader profile designed to assess your security risk at a border crossing, it completely crosses the threshold. It's no longer just serving an ad, it's participating in a state-level security assessment.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because if biometric profiling dictates how the system sees you, the next critical piece of this draft explores how the system uses that vision to open or close doors for you in the real world.
The gatekeeper function.
Right. We are moving into how AI acts as a gatekeeper to education, jobs, and essential services.
This is where the abstract rules hit everyday life. Regulators are deeply concerned about algorithms controlling human livelihoods. So AI use for student admissions, grading exams, hiring employees, and filtering CVs, they are all explicitly listed as high risk.
Let's apply that to a company trying to hire a new marketing director. If they use an AI to generate the text for the job description, that's just a language model doing text generation.
Yeah, and text generation alone does not trigger the high-risk classification.
Right.
But the moment the company takes a stack of 200 resumes, feeds them into the AI, and asks the system to rank those human candidates against the job description to output the top five contenders, that is high risk.
Because it's making a judgment.
Exactly. The AI has moved from writing a document to acting as a gatekeeper to employment.
And the scrutiny doesn't stop once you get the job either. Workplace monitoring has become intensely invasive, especially with the rise of remote work and the gig economy.
The guidelines address the power dynamic in the workplace directly. If an AI is used to allocate shifts, and it determines your weekly schedule by analyzing behavioral profiling, like tracking your past performance metrics or monitoring exactly how many minutes you spend away from your keyboard, that system is high risk.
Because it's materially affecting your working conditions based on constant surveillance.
Precisely.
On the flip side, what if I'm driving for a rideshare app and the in-app navigation suggests a faster route to drop off a passenger? That's just a suggestion, right? I can ignore it without getting penalized or having my pay docked.
And because you can ignore it without consequence, it remains an optional logistics tool. It's not acting as your manager, so it doesn't fall under the high-risk umbrella for employment.
The stakes get even higher when we look at essential services. Things we need just to survive in a modern society.
Absolutely. AI systems determining your eligibility for welfare benefits, calculating your credit score, or setting your health and life insurance premiums are universally classified as high risk.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, these are algorithms that dictate your financial survival and your access to a basic standard of living.
And I want to highlight an important distinction here from our source material. Lawyer Kung Jin Kim specifically points out in his commentary that these rules surrounding credit and essential services apply exclusively to natural persons.
That is a very critical legal boundary. The AI Act is designed as a shield for human beings against automated bureaucracy.
So it doesn't apply to corporations.
Right. If a bank uses an AI algorithm to evaluate the creditworthiness of a massive multinational corporation for a commercial loan, this specific high-risk classification doesn't apply to the software. The only exception for businesses is if they are sole traders, which is essentially an individual operating as a business. The goal is protecting everyday people from algorithmic discrimination.
And we see that urgency most clearly in healthcare.
Yeah.
Going back to our emergency room scenario from the beginning of the deep dive.
If a hospital deploys an emergency triage AI to evaluate incoming patients and decide who gets the next available trauma bay, that system is unequivocally high risk. It is making prioritization decisions that could result in life or death.
But not all health or safety AI is high risk, right?
True. Contrast that hospital AI with a government agency using AI to analyze satellite imagery to forecast which geographic regions are at the highest risk for flooding next spring.
Oh, because it's looking at land, not people.
Exactly. The forecasting AI isn't profiling or targeting specific individuals. It's just analyzing environmental data. Therefore, it completely avoids the high-risk label.
Okay, so we've moved from how AI shapes our civic opportunities to the hard powers of the state. The guidelines dedicate significant attention to law enforcement, migration, and the justice system. The power imbalance here is absolute. We are talking about the state's ability to arrest you, deport you, or imprison you.
The regulatory net tightens significantly in this arena. AI used for polygraphs, which today means software analyzing micro-expressions or vocal stress to infer deception, is high risk. AI systems designed to assess the reliability of evidence in a criminal investigation are high risk.
And profiling.
Most notably, yes. AI used for profiling individuals to assess their risk of committing a future crime is high risk.
Predictive policing. I have to play the devil's advocate here because this is a massive debate. Human police officers and judges are notoriously biased. Studies show judges give harsher sentences right before their lunch break when they are hungry.
That is a well-documented phenomenon, yes.
All right. Humans profile each other based on terrible, deeply ingrained prejudices. So shouldn't a cold, calculating machine actually be more objective at identifying criminal patterns than flawed humans?
This raises an important question, but it's a compelling argument only until you look at the actual mechanism of how predictive policing algorithms are built. An AI does not objectively measure crime. It measures historical data, which usually means arrests. And that data was generated by those same flawed, biased humans.
So if a specific neighborhood was heavily over-policed for decades due to human bias, the historical data shows a massive density of past arrests in that area.
Precisely. The algorithm ingests that data, flags the neighborhood as high risk, and directs the police department to send more patrols there tomorrow.
And more patrols lead to more arrests for minor infractions.
Exactly. Which feeds fresh data back into the algorithm, reinforcing its original prediction. It creates a self-fulfilling mathematical doom loop.
A doom loop. That is a chilling phrase.
The AI doesn't remove the bias. It crystallizes it, operating at a massive scale and hiding its discrimination behind a veil of complex, unreadable math.
Which is why the draft explicitly states you cannot have a system that predicts criminal risk based solely on profiling or personality traits.
Exactly. AI can assist human investigators in sorting through massive amounts of evidence, but the risk of automated bias leading to false arrests or wrongful deportations at borders is so catastrophic that the draft mandates the highest levels of transparency and human oversight.
What happens when those cases actually reach the courtroom? The concept of a robot judge handing down a verdict feels like the ultimate dystopian nightmare.
Well, the regulators address the courtroom directly. If an AI is used to assist a judge by taking the specific facts of a case, applying the relevant law, and drafting the actual judicial ruling, that system is high risk. It is actively participating in legal reasoning.
But if the court is just using a speech-to-text AI program to transcribe the audio of the hearing for the public record? Or what if the judge uses a legal search engine to find a precedent from 10 years ago?
Those are procedural tools. They do not interpret the law or decide the outcome of the case, so they escape the high-risk label. The ultimate decider, the entity connecting the facts to the law and handing down the verdict, must remain the human judge.
Zooming out from individual justice, the final major area the guidelines tackle is the foundation of collective society. The democratic process itself.
Yes. The draft outlines that any AI intended to influence the outcome of an election or a referendum, or intended to influence a person's voting behavior, is categorized as high risk.
So we are talking about the algorithms running on social media platforms that feed users a hyper-specific diet of articles designed to, you know, make them angry at a certain political candidate.
Social media algorithms, AI-driven political ad targeting, and highly persuasive political chatbots. Imagine a virtual canvasser that interacts with you online, subtly adapting its arguments based on your digital profile to sway your vote.
That's already starting to happen.
It is. And these tools have the potential to manipulate the democratic process on an industrial scale, bypassing human rational debate entirely.
But similar to the workplace rules, there are exemptions for logistics, right? Like if a political campaign uses an AI to optimize the driving routes for their volunteers knocking on doors.
Yes, that is excluded. Or consider a purely neutral government chatbot deployed on a city website that simply explains the mechanics of how to vote.
Like where your local polling place is.
Right, or what identification you need to bring. That system isn't trying to influence who you vote for. It is just facilitating the process.
So what does this all mean? Synthesizing everything we've covered today, the EU is drawing a very distinct line in the sand. On one side, you have AI that manages schedules, organizes raw data, and performs procedural admin work. And on the other side, you have AI that manipulates human agency, judges human worth, and shapes our democratic behavior.
Exactly. And it is vital to note that this regulatory framework is not about restricting legitimate political speech or limiting a company's ability to do business. We're looking at this completely impartially. What the AI Act attempts to do is ensure that the delivery mechanisms, the technology itself, are transparent, safe, and do not rely on opaque profiling or unacceptable manipulation.
We've covered a staggering amount of ground today, from the intricate mechanics of the filter mechanism, through the protections against biometric surveillance, all the way to the profound implications of algorithms acting as gatekeepers in our hospitals, our courtrooms, and our elections.
It is a monumental task for regulators to try and write the rules for technology that evolves on a weekly basis.
It really is. And we owe a massive thanks to lawyer Kyungjin Kim for providing this translation and commentary. Having access to this breakdown gives all of us a crucial window into how the battle lines for human agency are currently being drawn.
Absolutely. But as we wrap up, there is one final provocation I want to leave you with.
Let's hear it.
If you look closely at Annex 3, this entire regulatory framework relies heavily on the concept of human oversight. The underlying assumption is that as long as a human judge, a human doctor, or a human hiring manager is in the loop, we are protected.
Makes sense on paper.
But as AI systems become infinitely faster, process vastly more data, and sound exponentially more confident than any human brain ever could, will those professionals actually oversee the AI?
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Right. Or will they eventually just blindly rubber stamp its decisions because it's faster, it's easier, and the machine seems so certain? Are we successfully regulating the software, or are we ultimately going to have to figure out how to regulate human complacency?
Wow. That is the quiet threat lurking behind all of this legislation. We keep demanding that the algorithms become perfect, but we haven't figured out how to be the perfect humans required to oversee them. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the algorithms, keep looking for the human in the loop, and keep exploring the technology that is quietly shaping your world.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.